Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably... You know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stand by. Thank you for being with us. Stand by for some really important stuff from our good friend David Dossie. Welcome back, folks. And you think after all these years I would I'd be able to tell time when it is 34 after. And we're glad you're here. We've got some good stuff lined up for you with our good buddy David Dossie. David is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He is an intellectual property attorney, also known, a.k.a. patent attorney. He does that, some of that stuff, too. Primarily, though, for me, because he is my intellectual property attorney, he helps me with trademarks and registration and things like that and other intellectual property issues. And he's our good friend, David Dossie. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. You know, David, one of the things you've done over the years is, and for which we appreciate very much, you've helped us to understand that all businesses of every size have some kind of intellectual property, and it could be as simple as a process that they keep as a trade secret. It could be something that very simple, just the way of turning right in your operations instead of turning left. That's intellectual property at its simplest form, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny to watch small businesses, since I'm in this every day, that when they have those soft intellectual property like that, a delivery route or what have you, small businesses tend to undervalue their intellectual property, whereas a small business that may have one trademark registration or they did get one patent issued, conversely, they tend to dramatically overvalue their intellectual property.
Well, exactly. But you know what? That's a high-class problem, isn't it? The second example. Because the first example is the hard one, because what happens, you said that they undervalue. Well, heck, I'd just be happy if small business owners would start to recognize that they have something to value.
Good point.
To me, I think that's the chicken. I mean, that's the egg. The next thing after the egg is the fact that you first have to say, all right, I accept that I have intellectual property, and the second thing is, okay, what's it worth? Wow, I didn't know it was worth that much. And then after that, as you say, the third level is, oh no, this is worth $1 million or whatever. But that's when you create a monster, right, David?
Sure.
Yeah. So. But one of the things that you want to talk about today, I think, is how to make sure that we don't wait too late to identify and to secure and to leverage and to protect our intellectual property before it's too late, when someone else is already either about to make us rich or about to make us an offer or do something we'd like for them to do, and we're not prepared for the transaction.
Right. And unfortunately with small businesses, very often they don't think about protecting this stuff until someone is on the verge of a cash infusion or they want to merge your company, bring it in to their company. And then it gets awkward because eventually you are going to have contracts you need to sign that have representations and warranties regarding your assets and which, by and large nowadays, are often majority related to intellectual property. And typically these agreements will have schedules where you're supposed to list all your intellectual property. And it's an awkward situation when the client comes to us and says, okay, well, I've got this guy about to make this investment, and we're hammering out this agreement. And we look at the agreement, and that schedule on the back is blank. I say, well, what are we going to put here? And the blank stares are,
right.
It's sad.
Or how about this? Another example would be where the investor or the purchaser or whatever the transaction is attracted to you because of something, some brand that you have, or some slogan, or something that they see as of intellectual property value, and they assume that you have secured that, and that's one of the big reasons they want to make the transaction, and then they find out that you've just been using it, you don't have it secured at all.
Mm-hmm. That is not uncommon, and I often tell people, you know, if this were going to be a merger of, for instance, two crane rental companies,
right,
you can bet that there's going to be an asset breakdown of all these cranes, and
right,
there's going to be equity assigned to each.
Right, right, exactly. And your intellectual property is an asset, just like some of that equipment is. Take a quick break. Right back with our good buddy David Dossie. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Got a black magic woman. Do it or die now. Stand your ground. Don't let your bad breaks go getting you down. Even when
little Atlanta rhythm section bringing you back, bringing us back to you. This is our anthem. Surely it is. Do it or die, small business owners. That's what we do, isn't it? Welcome back, 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm glad you're here. Smallbusinessadvocate.com is my website. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. We built it just for you. Lots of good stuff there. You can read or listen to. You can ask questions. You can subscribe to my newsletter. Check out my blog. Lots of stuff there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blassingame. David Dossie is our guest. He's our good friend and my intellectual property attorney. And he is one of the top two intellectual property attorneys in our brain trust. And he's a partner with Gallagher and Dossie, right, David?
Absolutely.
And that's invention-protection.com is the website.
Yes.
As I remember. All right, so check that out, folks. We're talking about making sure that your company is ready for something to happen. We're focusing on some event like a merger or an acquisition or an investor coming in or something like that. But the truth is it's just good business even when you're not doing any of that, isn't it, David? Knowing what intellectual property you have, you paid for some of this. I mean, some of this you paid good money for, so you need to identify it, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And without doing that, you know, or by doing that, it brings so many other issues to the top of your mind that you really should be taking care of.
Well, you know, do you think part of the reason is because we don't depreciate this like we would a piece of equipment?
Yeah, probably. If you included it on a tax schedule and, you know, had a depreciation schedule, most small businesses, well, like that crane rental company example, you
right,
know, they're not going to overlook something they can depreciate.
Well, why can't we depreciate an asset like that? Why can't we of course we can expense the development of it, I guess. This has value, and you should think about it like that, folks. Think about it like you would a piece of hard asset, a name, a trademark, a slogan, a process, or anything like that. Talk to us about the example of Volkswagen and Rolls-Royce. This is a great story, folks. It's a big business story, but it could easily apply to a small business.
Oh, it can. Exactly. It can apply. Think your local pizza chain. You know, at one point that started as a one- or two-store operation. And here in Columbus, within 20 years, Donato's Pizza has grown to a huge, you know, retailer. But the most famous example of a IP due diligence mishap was in 1998, Volkswagen was acquiring the assets of Rolls-Royce, or so they thought, and Rolls-Royce and Bentley from the company named Vickers,
mm-hmm.
and Volkswagen paid $700 million for the cars, the designs, the hard assets
to one of the most prestigious emblems in the world.
Exactly.
But as it turns out
that the trademark portfolio of Rolls-Royce was not included in that deal.
They didn't get the emblems.
And they did not know that until afterwards. And then here comes BMW to contact the correct owner of the trademark portfolio, and they picked it up for $65 million.
Mm-hmm. But all they got were the emblems, right? The right to use that name.
Right.
So you're saying Volkswagen didn't even get the right to use the name Rolls-Royce?
Exactly.
Now I wonder how many attorneys. I wonder what that discussion was like with those attorneys. What do you think?
I wouldn't even have had the discussion. I would have just packed my box and walked out.
Just walked out. Exactly. But I mean, that's gross incompetence, isn't it? On many levels, isn't it?
Well, it just goes to think that people always focus on how many square feet am I getting? You know, how many welding machines am I getting? And it's always a second thought.
Well, and you know, you mentioned this a little earlier. You alluded to this in the previous segment. One of our other intellectual property attorneys, Kenneth Crozen, did a study. David, I've told you about this and years ago, and determined that today, you know, maybe as much as 70% to 80% of the assets of most corporations are intellectual property. And that's a complete inversion of where they were back in the '70s, for example. And you know, 70-30 to 30-70 with regard to, you know, hard assets versus intellectual property. And so, I mean, you've got to be thinking about this. And so, you know, let's talk about some of the examples. Let's talk about some of the things, David, that we should start thinking about as having value.
Well, I think that one important consideration is if you don't seek protection of your intellectual property, if you have protectable IP via registered trademarks or patent applications, and you don't do it until someone is on the door knocking, you know, wanting a piece of the action, they quickly realize it, because people don't get the money to invest by being stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So if they see that you did not even seek protection on any of the intellectual property until a month before we were about to do a deal, or even a year before we were about to do a deal, well, that tells them that you didn't value it very, you didn't take it seriously, and you didn't think it had a lot of value to your company. And yet, you're going to come in your deal with them and try to present that as a very valuable asset.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of situations where that really can come back to haunt you, because they'll, you know, flat up say, well, you didn't think it was valuable before,
right,
but when you're getting my money, you have no problem. You can
they can find out beforehand if you actually own something.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're interested in you, they could go get it themselves, right?
Right.
When we come back, I'm going to tell you some funny stories about how I've motivated people to secure something. We'll do that right after these messages. Ten Till, Jim Blasingame, stay with us. Little Joe Cocker bringing us back. 7 Till. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. We're visiting with our good friend David Dossi, intellectual property attorney extraordinaire. He is a partner in Gallagher and Dossi. That's invention-protection.com is the website where you can find him. And this is not your grandfather's intellectual property patent attorney website. It's a special one. So check it out when you get a chance. Invention-protection.com. David, one of the things I've been having some fun with as I've done my show, you know, as you know, I ask everyone, what's your website? Tell us the audience your website. I want people to be able to find you if they want to. Sometimes over the years, people have said, I don't have a website. And I've said, you mean you don't even have yourname.com? They say, no, I haven't. I don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to them off the air, if you don't go get that right now, here's the address. Here's where you go. Here's the URL. Here's how you do it. I'll walk you through it. If you don't do it by lunch today, I'm going to go get it, and I'll own yourname.com.
Yeah, and it's funny. I, being an avid golfer like you, there was a golf website that recently had a contest for name that putter. So they worked with a putter company, and they were having a contest to see who could come up with the best name for a putter.
Right.
And they published, here's the winner, you know, so he won a custom putter and $1,000 or something, and they put the winning name right there. And I thought, well, you know what, if you didn't already apply for the trademark on that, I could go file an intent to use trademark application, and you would be that contest would have been a total bust.
Right.
Or you would have had to pay me also to get the name.
Well, and, you know, look around you. If one day you woke up at work, you went to work and there was a letter on your thing there, on your desk, that said, someone else has taken your phone number. Now, see, my phone number at my office I've had for over 20 years. And I wouldn't like it if somebody took that phone number away. But I own it. I've to the degree that anybody owns a number, I have it. Nobody can take that away from me. Theoretically, I guess. But look around you at other things that are of value to you. Your address is valuable to you. That's something that a lot of people find value in. Your phone number is valuable. The name of your company, your slogan, your tagline, whatever. Look around and see, David, what do you think? Look around and see the things. What if someone said, I own that now. You can't use that anymore because I own it. Or at least you can't sell it because I own it. Or you can't use it because I own it. What do you think about that, David? Think about those things and see if, and then talk to an intellectual property attorney about what to do about that.
Right. And I think for a lot of small businesses, the value of your intellectual property really falls into your know-how, your skills, your contacts, your trade secrets. And mm-hmm. that could be as simple as, like I said before, a delivery route or a supplier in Asia that you know you can get these products for 50% of mm-hmm. what everyone else is paying.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the type of things that if you're making them freely available to everyone in your office, just takes one person to leave and start their own competitive
right.
company.
Right.
And that went from having very high value to zero value.
Right. And so the point you're making there, part of the point you're making, is that some things are intellectual property, but you don't do anything with them but keep them secret.
Right. And that's important. That brings up why you really need to have control over who has access to certain things. Make sure people don't have unfettered access to your whole computer system.
Mm-hmm.
And the key people that are going to have a little higher level of access do have employment agreements that contain confidentiality provisions
right.
and non-compete provisions and the like.
Well, exactly, and this has happened. How many? I mean, how many thousands? How many? Who knows? How many millions of times has this happened, where someone would work for someone and see the advantage that this company had, and see that it wasn't being secured, that advantage, and that it wasn't being valued and appreciated, and they would literally take it and go somewhere else, and there wouldn't be anything you could do about it.
Well, and that's why if someone is looking at investing in your company in a merger acquisition type position or a VC position, those are questions they're going to ask. If your key
right.
employees don't have those agreements in place,
mm-hmm.
and that's why so many of these type of agreements, you know, there are key employee provisions that they have to stay on for
right.
X number of years
right.
or what have you, because they know that a lot of businesses, their IP does lie almost exclusively in the head of their employees
right.
or
right.
key employees.
Exactly.
And you have to have that taken care of.
Well said. Hey, David, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you,
as
Jim.
Always. We'll see you later. David Dossie, ladies and gentlemen. That's invention-protection.com. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.